This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. This is a program about questions. So let's begin with this question. How did we get from this?
Mexico and great. Mexico and great.
To this. That's a passenger being dragged off a United flight because the airline needed his seat and he didn't want to give it up. Or this. A recent melee at a Spirit Airlines ticket counter. Sounds quite spirited to me. Remember the days when U.S. Air began with you? Well, times have changed. Back then, airlines were losing money. Today, they're in the black, but they're also earning some black eyes due to overbooked flights, diminishing amenities, and overall unpleasant travel experience, and, of course, recent incidents of violent confrontations with passengers. Is all of this the new normal of air travel, or are these recent incidents merely coincidences? Just as the summer travel season is about to start, we're going to stow all of our other concerns in the overhead bin or neatly below the seat in front of us as we take a look at the state of the airline industry. Ted Reed covers that industry for Forbes and TheStreet.com. With Dan Reed, he wrote American Airlines, U.S. Airways, and the creation of the world's largest airline back in 2014. He has also been a reporter for the Charlotte Observer and the Miami Herald, and he joins us in our Spirit Square studio. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Mike.
Seth Kaplan has been pursuing his two loves, journalism and aviation, since college, and today is managing partner at Airline Weekly and the author of Glory Lost and Found, How Delta Climbed from Despair to Dominance in the Post-9/11 Era, and he joins us this morning from Washington, D.C. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Mike. Good to be here.
Ted, let me start with you. These recent high-profile incidents involving passenger scuffles with ticket agents and police in Chicago dragging a person off an airplane with a flight attendant making a mother with two babies give up her stroller over a kind of a testy confrontation. I would take it these are all unfortunate high-profile incidents, but not the norm. Would that be correct?
It's absolutely right. You got to remember we have 2 million airline passengers a day in our country, and if one or two people is unhappy, then because of the rise of social media, which has largely become a forum for expressing outrage in our country, we get attention to these incidents that's sort of disproportionate, and also that does not show how the incidents originated, which typically occurs because a passenger sort of doesn't know or chooses not to follow rules and everything escalates, but it's certainly not typical of the airline industry in which most passengers are satisfied.
Seth, is this symptomatic of something else going on in the industry? Because it seems like we never used to hear about these incidents. Is it simply the fact that people have cameras in their telephones and now it makes the news media every night when it does happen? Or is there something else going on here as well?
Well, that's the only thing we know, right, is that there are more cell phone cameras. We know that we're hearing more about this, and then the question is, right, is it happening more, or are we simply hearing more about it? I think it's probably some combination of the two, but weighted heavily toward that we're just hearing more about it. Flights are fuller than they ever were. Airplanes, to a degree, are packing more seats on them. So if in some small way just having more people in the same amount of space would lead to heightened tensions, I suppose it wouldn't be unreasonable to conclude that things are a little more likely to happen. But when you look at the statistics, for example, most recently there was a J.D. Power survey last week that came out that, basically all of these government statistics and private surveys have concluded that airlines are generally doing about as good of a job as they've been doing in a long time in terms of, punctuality, losing fewer bags, generating fewer overall customer complaints. Of course, the industry is safer than it's ever been, and they're doing it all generally at the lowest cost they've ever done it. So, any way that we can measure tells us that things aren't so awful. And so I tend to think that these are one-offs. There is a tendency with the media and public, and not just with airlines, but just in general, that sort of when something happens, you have some combination of some copycat events and then just, you know, some heightened sensitivity to the same sorts of things. You might remember, Mike, a few years ago, there was a fight on one flight over a reclining seat. And then for 2 weeks after that, it seemed like the only thing that was happening in America were fights over reclining seats, right? Probably some heightened sensitivities among passengers, and then some of just sort of the media paying more attention to something that, you know, that had always happened once.
Seth just mentioned, Ted, this J.D. Power survey, which actually surprised me when I saw it yesterday, because you hear about all these horrible things happening on airplanes and passengers being so frustrated and angry at airlines, et cetera. And the J.D. Power and Associates North America Airline Satisfaction Study. And J.D. Power is an organization that independently looks at lots of different industries, everything from cars to Mixmasters. And that study overall reports that the overall ranking of airline experiences by flyers rose for the fifth year in a row. It seems that satisfaction among passengers is going up even as the incidences that we see on the news continue to go up. What's up with that?
I think the main thing that's going on with that is that these airlines, the major airlines, have worked incredibly hard to make sure all of the flights are on time. And it's a belief in the airline industry that if the passenger gets an on-time arrival, that's basically the key to happiness.
And yet we've seen instances recently in the news of people being in airports for 3 days trying to get out of an airport because of computer glitches and weather things.
That's a different issue. But let me just say that as far as being on time, we're up at 80% arrivals. It costs a lot of money. There's more block time per flight. And incidentally, the last survey from DOT showed that the three biggest airlines – American, Delta, and United were among the top four for on-time performance. Hmm. And it's long been the belief in the airline industry this is the most important thing to the passenger, and it also results in fewer mishandled bags, you don't miss connections, and all the good things happen, and that makes people happy.
So that, let me ask this question, and maybe this will end the show early. Is flying today a worse experience or a better experience than it was in the 70s, 80s, 90s, early 2000s?
I do want to address the thing that you just mentioned, which is that people get stuck in the airport for 3 days because of weather events. And part of that is because in this industry, we used to have our load factors were about one-third, about 66%. So there are a lot of empty seats. So if you happen to miss a flight or a flight was canceled for some reason or you got there late, you could get another seat. And now the average load factor is 80%. So if a flight is canceled, you might in fact be stuck in the airport for 3 days.
So, Seth, is it a better experience or a worse experience to fly today than it was 30, 40, 20, 10 years ago?
Well, I think it's in the aggregate better if we take into account price. And that's important because anybody who talks about how great things used to be sort of perhaps inadvertently reveals that they are among the, if you go back to the 70s especially, among the fortunate minority of people who could even afford to fly back then. The flying now is democratized. It's for the masses. There are people who can now afford to do it who could never do it back then, who don't have any memory of the good old days because they couldn't fly then. The thing, too, is that the cost has come down so much that if you want all the amenities, you can literally buy a first-class ticket today for less on an inflation-adjusted basis than an economy ticket back then. So, you know, if the definition of airlines doing a better job would be a free bad meal or check bags included and all the sorts of things that have mostly been unbundled, then sure, the answer is no, they're not. But overall, I think people are pretty happy. I think sometimes there's also this disconnect between what people say and what they seem to demonstrate through their actions. It's not that they're lying. You know, if you ask somebody, what do you think of flying, Frontier or Allegiant, you know, in or near Charlotte, or Spirit, obviously sort of the national poster child, although it doesn't serve Charlotte, for a no-frills airline at this point, you know, most people will tell you that they hate it, and yet they fly it. And it's funny, I actually had a discussion once. I was at a party, and this woman told me, she said, I hate flying Spirit. You know, I fly them all the time, and I hate them. And I said to her, I said, well, you know, I don't understand why you would do something all the time that you hate. And she you know, she said, well, you know, I mean, it's cheap, and it's, and they have these convenient nonstop flights to where I go and all these sorts. I said, okay, so it sounds to me like, you know, there are things about flying Spirit that you hate, and we're all familiar with those things. But overall, the things you like about them are more important to you than the things you hate about them. And so, you know, I think there's that too. And having flown all three of those airlines, Spirit, Allegiant, and Frontier, you know, there are elements of the experience that I absolutely, you know, myself don't like, but it has always just been rational to fly them when I've done that, either because it was so much cheaper or just, yeah, in a few cases more convenient.
Ted, Seth just mentioned the democratization of flight, because I do remember taking a flight on my first job interview. It was my first flight, and it was my first job interview.
Did you get the job?
I got the job, and I flew Eastern Airlines and in economy, and yet we had silverware, and we had meals delivered at free of charge was part of the deal. And it was a very nice experience. Democratization has caused, and also the lowering of prices, the democratization, the filling of airplanes. Is that causing part of this problem? In other words, we have a lot of people who never flew before, and they don't know the rules. They don't know how to conduct themselves on a flight because they've never flown before, and there's lots of them. Or is it just the fact that we're jamming these airplanes full of people, and that's a problem?
Well, I've always been hearing about, you know, we have problems getting through TSA because there are these people, this mysterious guy who's never flown before. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's that so much as what Seth was talking about. The price of flying has gone down.
Well, let me coarsen it then. Is it that people are now able to fly who couldn't fly, who don't have manners in any walk of life?
I think as a society we have fewer manners, and I think it's amazing to a lot of people that you see these people not particularly well-dressed get on airplanes. You know, when this industry began, after the war began to grow, there was a lot of competition with the railroad industry. That was how people traveled, so we wanted to have the white gloves and the meal service and flight attendants kind of dressed up, and it was, as Seth said, only a small minority of people who could fly. And gradually this industry was able to consolidate, bring prices down, and get more and more people on airplanes. We became more and more reliant on travel. Last year there were about 800 million Americans flying. I think that was the highest total ever. We're well on the path to having a billion Americans flying every year. And we have more and more people. We have lower and lower prices. And we have more and better convenient service. And that just brings everybody into the airport.
Yeah. You mentioned the TSA, and Seth, I only have a minute left here, but you told the New York Times that the change in air travel and how all this frustration began happened with 9/11 and the security precautions that event ushered in. Is that what's made air travel more unpleasant?
It's an element of it, and I think especially for infrequent flyers, and we can talk about this more on the other side of the break if you want. I think sometimes this is portrayed as airlines against passengers, and I think there's a little more nuance than that. But, you know, the people who don't fly very frequently kind of feel like every time they show up at the airport, the rules have changed again, and you can kind of understand, you know, why. And it is sort of an inherently stressful situation. They would sometimes react and overreact the way they do.
Seth Kaplan is managing partner of Airline Weekly. Ted Reed writes about this for Forbes and thestreet.com. My producers are questioning me because I said I flew for my first job interview, and they want to know if they had planes in the Pleistocene era. Yes, I flew Pterodactyl Airlines. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Doctors Making House Calls. Physician-owned and managed, Doctors Making House Calls works to help complex patients stay healthy at home and avoid unnecessary ER visits and hospitalizations. Details available at doctorsmakinghousecalls.com. And Nexen Pruitt, over 190 lawyers helping companies meet business challenges in court and at the deal table from Charlotte and seven other Carolina locations. Next challenge, next level, next and Pruitt. On the local news roundup, the Supreme Court won't consider this state's voter ID law appeal, but GOP lawmakers aren't giving up. The CMS board considers revisions to the student assignment proposal. Local lawmakers react to President Trump's sharing of classified intelligence information with the Russians. And Governor Cooper announces LGBT protections. Our roundtable of reporters will fill in the details of those stories and more tomorrow on the local news roundup on this program beginning at 9.
I'm Jane Clayson. Coming up on the next On Point, the president under fire heads off on his first international trip. Will the Comey controversy follow him, and what will it cost him abroad? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Stay tuned for On Point following Charlotte Talks from 10 to noon here on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the airline industry, the state of flying today as the summer travel season is poised to begin. And we're doing that with two people who cover this regularly, this industry. Seth Kaplan, managing partner of Airline Weekly and author of Glory, Lost and Found, How Delta Climbed from Despair to Dominance in the Post-9/11 Era. Ted Reed is with us, an industry reporter for Forbes and TheStreet.com and author of American Airlines, U.S. Airways, and the creation of the world's largest airline. With these two titles, we barely have time to do the show. Let's go back and talk about the place where a lot of passengers who become frustrated, and that is at the ticket counter in some cases for some reason. Maybe it begins in the parking lot, I don't know. But certainly it begins with the TSA check-in for a lot of people because it's a long line in many cases and you have to take things out of your bags and perhaps you forgot that you can't pack your full 16-ounce bottle of shampoo and they take it away from you and that makes you angry. Are they taking that frustration and that anger, Ted, out improperly on the airlines, which have nothing to do with it?
I mean, yes, absolutely. We imposed after 9/11 these strict security rules, which, as you may, as you can see, have worked because we've been able to make our diminish almost entirely the threat from terrorists in the United States. So it's worked, but it's a line that you have to wait in. You know, lines are stressful. If you're trying to catch an airplane at a certain time, you leave your house and you get to the airport. It's just stressful. I got to get to the airport. I got to catch my plane. I don't want to be late. So you have a stressful situation set up where it's demanded of the customer service people that you deal with that they understand that you're under a little bit of stress, and that's what normally happens. But yeah, waiting in line is stressful.
So, Seth, I mean, is there an easier way to do this, to go through security? Is there something the passenger can do or should do to make sure that that doesn't become a point of frustration for them?
Well, I mean, there's pre-check for people who fly enough, and that does cost money, and you have to go through the process. I fly frequently enough that it's clearly worth it for me. But I think even for somebody who flies once or twice a year to sort of do that and have it for 5 years and just know that you can always show up at the airport. I mean, sometimes I push it. I probably shouldn't show up with as little time as I do, but, you know, you just kind of always get through, predictably in a rather quick way. So there's that. But then the rest of it is, yeah, just sort of knowing all the rules. A pre-check doesn't exempt you from any of the rules in terms of what you can pack, but you don't have to take off your shoes, don't have to take out your laptop and that sort of thing. And it's just, I mean, a lot of this isn't airline stuff. It's just human relation, you know, just catch more flies with honey than vinegar and all those cliches. I mean, it just nobody ever gets ahead being confrontational with TSA or with most people. You know, and by the way, Mike, you know, I think one way that this industry is different from others is the fact that there are all of these different entities involved in providing the service, right? If, you know, when somebody has an issue with their cable company, most of what goes wrong is generally within the control of the cable company. You know, it's usually mostly their fault. I mean, sure, weather can blow down a line or something. It's usually mostly their fault, and they can mostly fix it. You know, what's different here is that there are all of these safety and security issues and just all of these other entities. And you're right. In the end, it's, hey, I bought my ticket from the airline. I expect them, to to provide the service, but there are all of these other entities involved in all these regulations related to that they have to follow.
Let me say, being here in Charlotte, there's a couple of things to do that you can do to make your life a lot easier. The first is pre-check, as Seth was talking about. It's $85 for 5 years, so that's $17 a year, and we have a very good TSA service on lines in Charlotte most of the time, and I find my wait to get through pre-check at Charlotte Douglas is normally 5 to 10 minutes, and it's very easy. And I'm not selling anything, but if you have an American credit card, then you get to board earlier than other people, and you're probably flying American in Charlotte, and you take those two pieces, you're boarding a little bit earlier, you're getting through security a little faster, and gets you a better life.
This is completely anecdotal, but I've heard people talk about this pre-boarding or this early boarding that you pay the fee and you pay $85 and you're good for 5 years to walk through the gate, essentially, or walk through.
You go through pre-check lane, you go through the pre-check lane,
and that calls into question for a lot of people. Security. How can somebody, you could easily be become a terrorist in the 5 years that you have this early clearance. So how does this keep people safe?
I don't think you easily become a terrorist. We got like 300 million Americans, of which some small thousand may be terrorists.
People wonder as they stand in that line and they take off their shoes and they empty their stuff into those bins and they can't have more than 2 ounces of fluid in a container. They wonder, all right, maybe this is keeping us safe, but these guys are waltzing through. How why am I going through this?
Well, we can't quite figure out how to cut it down to the – how to figure out how to get these couple of thousand people who may be terrorists in our country. So we got to process everybody. It's kind of clanky. It does work. It's expensive. It's horribly expensive. It involves a lot of lost production time because of the lines, and it's inconvenient for people. However, since 9/11, we have not had an incident.
And then you do have these people who have the airline's credit card. Or they are a frequent flyer, priority boarding, et cetera, because of the perks that come with being a frequent flyer and using that credit card. And for people who don't have that credit card, who are not frequent flyers, they're standing in line at the gate and everybody's going on in front of them. That is a point of frustration and anger, isn't it?
It is, but somebody has to get on the airplane first. So the airline wants to reward its people who give it, who pay it money, either by buying a better, higher class ticket or just by having a credit card, which is only $100 a year.
Because following these recent incidents, passengers do seem more combative, it seems. And Brett Snyder, who's the author of crankyflyer.com, whatever that is, wrote an industry blog called In Case It's Not Clear, People Really Hate Airlines, in which he said that years and years of pent-up anger aimed at airlines is being released, and it's not pretty. Do people hate airlines?
I don't think that people necessarily hate airlines. As we've been saying, social media accelerates the rate of outrage that's expressed in our society, and at times it's directed at airlines because as we've been saying, it can be an unpleasant experience to wait in line. And, nobody wants to wait in line. We're all so busy. We all got our cell phones, and we all can communicate the slightest little irritation to the entire world. And so that's what we do.
The lack of regulation or the deregulation of the airline industry has led to a lot of changes. And among those changes has been industry consolidation. We used to have a gazillion airlines, and now they've all disappeared or been gobbled up into conglomerates. We had Piedmont, which became U.S. Air, or U.S. Airways, which has now become American Airlines, etc. Has the lack of competition, Seth, allowed airlines to do things that save them money and put them in the black, but which cause passengers to like the experience of flying less?
A few years ago, it might have been easier to answer yes to that question. What's interesting about airlines that are no longer struggling to get through the day, because let's face it, that's really why they all merged. A decade ago, most of the major airlines were either in bankruptcy, had just left bankruptcy, or were about to be bankrupt.
And sometimes again, for the second or third time.
Yeah. Right. In the case of U.S. Airways, everyone in Charlotte remembers they called it Chapter 22, Chapter 11 twice. So Basically, the old situation was unsustainable from their perspective. Here we're at this point where, first of all, as we said before, sort of in the most basic ways, punctuality, lost bags, customer complaints, obviously safety, which I say obviously as if it's nothing. Up until a couple decades ago, if you asked people in America what they valued in an airline, they would list safety among the top things that they looked for. Now they don't even say it. It's not because they care. It's because they just don't think about it, because that's how safe it has become. If you ask people today in sub-Saharan Africa what they value in an airline, they'll still list that, because there are more safety issues there. So it's safer, more punctual, all the rest of it, and at the lowest cost ever. So in those basic ways, it's hard to say that it's a bad deal. But even in terms of the amenities, and this is one of those things I can't say I would have predicted. A few years back, it seemed like this sort of inexorable race to the bottom in terms of just what they were going to take away next from the passengers. 5 years ago, just to name a few things, free beer and wine on long-haul flights, free snacks on short-haul flights, free in-flight entertainment, including premium entertainment, and other similar things like that. Of the big three airlines, Delta, American, and United, at least two of the three, and in most cases all three, had taken away all of that. And today, two of the three, and in most cases all three, and American in every one of those cases, has restored those things. Okay, and so what's interesting about it is that even though it's never going to completely go back to the way it used to be, because they were doing things that from their perspective never made sense, including two free checked bags, including more basically transportation of baggage than the value of a ticket in some cases. In some cases, you could buy a $39 ticket and take, what would cost hundreds of dollars to ship in through the bag. That never really made sense from their perspective. They're not going to do that again. But the other stuff, a year or so back when American put the free snacks back on short-haul flights, Doug Parker, the CEO of American, said at the time, he said, I can't really prove the return on investment of that. He said, but you know what? It costs us, I think he said, $10 million a year or something to give out the pretzels and everything. He said, we're a $40 billion company. If it makes people a lot happier for us to do this, yeah, I'm glad we can do that. Doug Parker wasn't saying those kinds of things as the CEO of U.S. Airways a decade ago. A decade ago, it was every cost that they could cut, they were cutting. And so it's just interesting that companies now that are back on their feet do have the luxury of thinking in longer terms in a way that, yes, makes them more money, but also sometimes benefits passengers.
The fact that we have these incidents now, and we've had several of them, and they seem, as you say, to build on themselves, and they get a lot of airtime on TV, is a problem for the airlines, I think, for their image. Talk about some of these incidents, Ted, that have taken place recently, and why they may have taken place, or what could have happened differently? Was it all the airline's fault, or was it the passengers' fault as well?
All right. First, Mike, I want to say that as well as airline industry is doing now, one thing that does irritate people justifiably is this is a fee-crazy industry.
Yes.
And the model was in Europe and charged fees for everything, and now our industry,
when you're shelling out several hundred dollars or maybe $1,000 for a ticket, a bag of pretzels doesn't seem like something you should have to pay for. Putting your bags in the overhead bin doesn't seem like something you should have to pay. That should come with the price of the ticket.
Mainline airlines, they came in first with the idea that you should pay for baggage. Most people could figure that out. It does make sense because of the weight. Now there's a $200 fee to change your mind if you buy a ticket and you want to go someplace. You want to change your mind, it's $200. And a lot of tickets don't cost $200, and that just seems unreasonable and irritating to people. And then there's another, which many of us think of as the worst fee in the airline industry, is if you get to the gate early and you want to go home early and you see an earlier flight, it costs $75 to change your ticket on American, even though it's to the airline's benefit to put you on the earlier flight. So we have a fee-crazy industry following the model that some people seem to like, but it seems excessive to a lot of people. As for the incidents, if you want to, look at them one by one. Yeah. I don't know which one you might want to look at.
Let me go over briefly.
The United incident. I know that everybody saw this guy being hauled off the airplane. Just a couple of points on that, which is, first of all, United didn't haul anybody off an airplane. They
Chicago
made the mistake.
Police did.
They made the mistake of calling. Well, not the mistake. They called the police, which was the procedure. If you can't get someone off the airline, call the police. And unfortunately, instead of Chicago police, these airport authority security officers showed up. I've had pilots tell me they would never let those guys on their airplane. But, you know, for some reason, instead of normal police, they were diminished people. And then I didn't mean to say that. They were not police. Mm-hmm. And the second thing was that this video is of a person who was hauled off the airplane by security officers, and then he decided to run back on the airplane. Who does that? And at that point, they hauled him off too roughly. So that
But they hauled him off because the airline needed his seat to accommodate a crew for another flight.
Yes.
He paid for his ticket. And they asked people to voluntarily give up their seats, and when they didn't, they just used an algorithm, I guess,
yes,
and chose him.
Yes, that's all true.
That would not happen in a movie theater. It wouldn't happen in a legitimate theater. It wouldn't happen anywhere that I can think of.
You sign a contract with the airline. The airline does have the right to take you off. The airline made a huge mistake in this case because, for whatever reason, the supervisor didn't go above $800. Now the airline industry has transformed itself, so now they could have offered $10,000. Be more willing to do that. He would have gotten off. But if the airline tells you to get off the airplane, then you need to get off the airplane.
I want to come back to that, those incentives to get off the plane. But in one of your articles, you quote Bob Ross, president of the Association of Professional Flight Attendants, as saying, "Flight attendants' work environment has deteriorated due to crowded airplanes, a lack of manners, a lack of time between flight segments, absolute minimum ground time, and the whole thing around on-time departures." There's a big drive to get the plane off the ground on time. He also says that a stern message needs to be sent that passengers should not menace flight attendants. They feel under siege?
Absolutely, because there's tremendous pressure to leave on time. That's what passengers want. That's the main thing. One of the main things that's improved the airline industry. Most passengers are fine, but on every flight you're going to get some person that's not fine, and that takes it out on the flight attendant who's standing right in front of him. You know, it used to be here in Charlotte when I was at the Observer. Every week there'd be we have a midnight flight from Las Vegas to Charlotte,
right,
and every week it would have to land in Nashville to let some drunk off because he was causing too much trouble. And we have full planes. People have less space. They're under stress. And if you're angry, you take it out on the flight attendant.
Because, you know, a lot of people used to be afraid to fly because they didn't want to be in a tin can at 30,000 feet because they were afraid the thing would fall out of the sky and they'd die. Now they're afraid of being punched in the face by a flight attendant. That's a
never happened.
But now, wait a minute. You told the Dallas Observer that we've become a nation of outrage fueled by social media. And you can't quite figure out how airlines got into the middle of this. How did they get into the middle of this?
Because everybody has a video device when they get on the airplane. There's 2 million passengers a day. 10 of them are extremely unhappy. They take a video, and partially because of this United incident, media is more willing to report it, even though the video typically shows only the last 1 minute of a 30, 40-minute event.
So be polite.
Being polite is always a good idea.
So, Seth, you have 20 seconds. Go ahead.
Guess you'll just have to agree with me, Seth.
What else can I say in 20 seconds? absolutely. Difference also with the – and I guess we could talk about the other incidents on the other side of the break. You know, United was in retrospect, it's something where the airline could have done things differently than the passenger reacted in a way that most of us would not. With the other incidents we've seen, it started with passengers.
All right, I got to take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Carolina Tree Care, providing residential and commercial general tree care, specializing in tree health care services. Carolina Tree Care's passion is to maintain and care for the canopy of the Carolinas. Information at carolinatreecare.com. And Atrium Animal Hospital and Wellness Center, providing holistic animal health care for 20 years, offering pet parents a strategy to achieve and maintain furry family vitality. Atrium Animal www.thenationalhospital.com. The Justice Department bows to pressure from Congress and appoints a special counsel to oversee the investigation into Russia and the 2016 election. The job has fallen to former FBI Director Bob Mueller. And President Trump on Twitter this morning says he's the target of the single greatest witch hunt of a politician in American history. The scandal is overshadowing Trump's first trip abroad as president, and that will be the topic of the conversation coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock.
Every day, NPR works to make sure you know more than just what's going on.
The plan calls for cutting the top corporate tax rate from 35%.
They're helping down federal immigration authorities. The U.S. Justice Department could try.
Now, that shift in the makeup of the student body allayed some of those parents' fears of sending their children to Sedgefield.
We check the facts and talk to people making, influencing, and affected by the day's news. Stand with the facts. Listen every day.
At 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the airline industry as we head into the summer travel season with Seth Kaplan, managing partner of Airline Weekly, Ted Reed, an airline industry reporter for Forbes and TheStreet.com. I want to move on from these incidences because I think we've fairly established that they've gotten out of hand because of unruly passengers and rude behavior and not necessarily, and some bad decisions by the airlines, which have since been corrected because the publicity was so bad for the airlines they had to fix it. But let's go back to something. They have gradually, in many cases, taken away these amenities that we just took for granted. We just thought that's what we get for the price of the ticket over time. You have to pay to check bags. You have to limit carry-ons. You have to buy meals when they're available now. You never used to have to do that. Is this what it takes for airlines to be profitable?
Airlines are finally profitable. It used to be said before 9/11 that since the time of the Wright brothers, the airline industry had lost money. And now they have finally found a model that makes them profitable. And as you know, Warren Buffett has now decided it's a worthwhile investment.
Yeah, he used to say it was a horrible investment.
Yes, and he used to say it was a horrible investment because of an investment in U.S. Air with when Ed Colony was there.
Yeah.
So now they have a model that works. Remember, I mentioned that airlines had to compete with railroads when they started, and the railroads had meals on the trains,
right.
And so the airlines felt they needed to have meals. But it turns out, and what every single person in the airline industry will tell you, in the end, most passengers only want the ticket that costs the least. So passengers, by and large, are price-driven. And in order to have the lowest price, then you need to take out amenities. And that has occurred on many levels, even though, as Seth said, now some are being put back.
So the bottom line is the bottom line. Passengers have now viewed these as big buses in the sky, not these resorts they used to fly for 2.5-3 hours.
Want to pay the least, and they will fly on these airlines like Spirit and Frontier that have less leg room, like 28-inch pitch, because they want the lowest price, even though most people can barely fit in there.
So the other thing that airlines have done historically is to be profitable is routinely overbook flights, because once the plane leaves the ground, empty seats can never be recouped. That revenue is lost forever on that flight, and it costs the same amount of money to fly the plane empty as it does full, one would think, or just about. So they have had these overbooked flights, and so people have to leave the flight or give up their seat in order for them to accommodate all the passengers. Restaurants couldn't get away with that.
This rarely happens, this overbooking discussion. It's a little bit overblown, but nevertheless, this incident with this Chicago character changed the industry in a way that it needed to be changed, so these people who are working at the gate who are under immense pressure to get out on time can go to $10,000 instead of going to $1,000.
Well, yes.
And so, now there will never be – it's safe to say that there will probably never be an incident like this again, because for $10,000, I will give up my seat.
Yes. But now let's talk about that for a second, Seth, because they've always offered incentives of some sort for you to give up your seat when they needed your seat, whether it's a free flight or they give you the next flight free, and plus they comp you a couple of extra flights later in the year. Now it's $10,000 in some cases. How can this possibly be cost effective?
Well, now the incentives are properly aligned to where the airline, look, most of these airlines are still going to want to overbook flights for the same reason that they always did, which is basically to give themselves the flexibility. And by the way, it mostly benefits consumers. You know, usually.
But if you're on a if you're on a plane and you're heading from Charlotte to New York and you have tickets to Hamilton that set you back $700,
yes.
and
right.
they tell you you can't get on that flight and there are no other flights and you're going to miss that play, you're going to be really ticked off.
Very ticked off, and that should never happen. By the way, what happened in Chicago, and you mentioned it earlier, had nothing to do with overbooking. In that case, it was that they were trying to get a crew to another flight, but a well-intentioned effort there, you know, because they're thinking, hey, if we don't get these people to that other flight in Louisville, we're going to have to cancel a flight and inconvenience, you know, perhaps hundreds of passengers rather than, you know, getting these few people off this flight. So they were trying to do the whole, you know, kind of greatest good for the greatest number thing. It all went horribly wrong in that sense. But even with the overbooking, so yeah, you know, almost always. I mean, I was going to a conference in San Diego a couple of years ago, and you know, I had to be there. I was connecting in Atlanta in that case on Delta. The flight was vastly oversold. They were offering $300, $400. I thought, well, I can't get. You know, they got up to $800, and I said, you know what? Yeah, I could miss the first session. And I took the voucher. So almost always, the people who are bumped are volunteers who are actually happy about it. You know, they get the voucher, they call their friends, they're like, you're not going to believe what happened. And in the more routine way that it benefits consumers, which you don't see, is the fact that, so of course, the reason airlines overbook is because they know that on you know many flights, a few people aren't going to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually enables them to sell more discounted tickets. And basically, it goes like this. Every airline knows that it could sell an infinite number of very cheap tickets in advance. It also knows that there's a chance that somebody is going to walk up at the last minute and want to pay a lot of money to get to that, you know, business meeting in Chicago, because paying $1,000 to get to a meeting where they're going to make, you know, $100,000 for their company is worth it. Now, if they couldn't overbook, they would kind of have to choose between the two. And guess who they're going to pick, between the $150 advance passenger or holding a seat open for the $1,000 passenger who's, you know, who might or might not show up but often shows up. You know, they're going to take the $1,000 passenger. With overbooking, they know, look, if the flight is full, we can get that person on, you know, the high-paying passenger on, by getting a volunteer if we have to, if everybody shows up. So, you know, generally speaking, it works rather well. What they've now – the loop they've now closed, as Ted said, is that, you know, whereas before they knew, hey, if we can't get volunteers, we'll just yank somebody off. With the $10,000 thing, it changes the incentives. They know, look – it's going to cost us a lot of money to get somebody off. So maybe they'll overbook a little more conservatively.
Yeah.
And if that's what happens, that's fine, you know. But they have mostly now taken care of that, mostly eliminated that very nasty, as you said, very nasty side effect. Even when you don't get dragged off a plane and you miss Hamilton or whatever it is, if they can make that go away and keep the other benefits from their perspective and from the perspective of consumers of overbooking, I think they've gotten to where they need to be.
We started this program with some airline jingles of old, and those airline jingles came from television and radio commercials encouraging you to fly this airline or that airline over the other airlines. You don't see those very often anymore. You don't hear them on the radio very often anymore. How are airlines competing, or do they no longer need to compete because there's so few of them and they each have their own particular route system?
I think that airlines compete a great deal in advertising in certain markets, but you got to remember we're sitting here in Charlotte, Mike. So
okay.
90% of our air service is on the same airline, and there's less of a need to do that type of advertising, although I will say that American is very involved. I attended an event two nights ago where American Airlines donated $340,000 to Charlotte Charities because the station manager here is retiring. And so American is very involved. You know, we have and in some places they have American Airlines arenas and things like that. But I think there's advertising that we don't see in Charlotte.
Let me share some emails and communication that have come in from listeners as we've been talking. Joey emails, airlines are a great example of what happens when an industry becomes primarily focused on price competition. Quality suffers, but blame the passengers too. For decades, Americans have sat in their own cars, commuting on overloaded metro area freeways. Look at the way we treat each other in traffic. Me first. Bleep you. Brooke emails, I don't think we can put all the blame on the airlines for passengers being nickel and dimed or being removed from a flight. The flying public cried out that they wanted to fly for less money. The airlines responded by making their services a la carte. This is not unheard of in other industries. Is that all that's happening here, or is it simply a way to be profitable as well?
Well, first, I'd say you have very intelligent listeners, who, and
yes,
both of those things are true. Mm-hmm. But yes, there's a tendency by many passengers to just buy the lowest price ticket, whatever,
okay.
And then you know, and then the airlines can respond by having you pay for the amenities, and that seems to be working.
Chris emails, I have. Go ahead, Seth.
No. Exactly, and I think also, you know, what's happened here is that the airline industry, in many respects, just looks more like every other industry. Everything else we do in our lives, you know, we're used to paying different amounts of money depending on what we use. You know, if you flip the analogy, okay, yes, there's such a thing as an all-you-can-eat buffet, but typically you go to a restaurant, you know, we all understand that if we order a steak and a glass of wine, we're going to pay more than if we order a sandwich and a glass of water. You know, airlines have just sort of gotten there, but it's jarring to consumers because they were used to how it always was in the airline industry, which was actually sort of the exception among companies we do business with.
Okay. Jamie emails, I have not been on a less than full flight in a long time. I think they need to raise their prices, give more room and service, and take flying back to the days when it was a luxury rather than a bargain way to travel. I personally would pay the extra in a New York minute. What about that?
Well,
why isn't there an airline that caters to people like that?
Very interesting. First of all, obviously the airlines have first class, which most people don't want to make the expense. Secondly, there's a move by the airline industry now to go to a middle class of seats, business extra, business plus. Delta has a product called Delta Comfort. You pay a little more. You get to board a little earlier. You get more leg room, sometimes more food service. And they are, in fact, doing that. But it just takes time to reconfigure all these aircraft.
On the other hand, big carriers like American and United are getting into the low-fare carrier business with no-frills flights at a low price. But at that price, you may have to forgo any access to the overhead bins unless you pay. You have to board last. You probably don't have the option of choosing the seat you're going to sit in when you buy your ticket. Are passengers taking advantage of that?
Yes, yes. And that's a direct response to these they're called ultra-low fare carriers, Spirit and Frontier, and to an extent Allegiant.
Yeah.
And they have exactly what you describe. And there's a group of people who seem to want to buy it, and the major airlines want to accommodate those people as well as the people willing to pay a little more. So they're making more categories within the cabin, so you will have more choice of what you want.
That said, according to the New York Times, these basic economy tickets on United and American and Delta, in which everything costs extra, may not save you money. Not because everything is extra, but because the cost of the actual ticket may be the same as the basic economy fare, but without the frills. And NPR reports that these tickets aren't priced any lower, but are instead a way to raise standard economy fares. Seth, is that true?
To some degree. I mean, look, they're a way to make more money, right? That's in the end what airlines are trying to do. It's in most of these markets that we're talking about, it is a reasonably competitive industry where customers have different choices. And, you know, in the end, airlines are always, you know, this isn't new, airlines are always trying to charge as much as they think people are willing to pay. And there are going to be times where, they're going to find out, you know what, we can get as much for this basic ticket as we used to get for the standard ticket. And in other cases, they won't. In other cases, it'll be a way to sort of get those very discretionary, price-sensitive travelers who aren't going to travel at all unless the ticket is very, very cheap and are willing to give up even some things that everybody, as you said, used to take it for granted, like being able to use the overhead bin. But in the end, yeah, I mean, they're obviously businesses, and they're doing it because they think it's going to overall make them more money. But not everything that's good for a business is bad for consumers. And to the extent that you enable some people to travel who just otherwise might not be able to, that's a good thing.
But if it's true that these new low economy, no frills fares are sometimes the same price as the regular economy fares, at which you do get access to the overhead bin and you do get to pick your seat and you don't have to sit in the middle seat, aren't people going to become upset because they discover, well, heck, I could have paid the same price for a better deal?
Well, that kind of thing's been going on in the industry for a long time, that you pay $100 for your seat and you turn to the guy next to you and he paid $1,000 for the same seat. I will say it's pretty well known that these fares, that these ultra-low fares that the big three carriers are offering, if you go on the website to book those fares, they all say, hey, they all have notices on there once you start booking. You sure you want to do this? And then they say, look at these other fares. And it's really an effort to sell up.
Okay.
So that most people, I don't think they end up buying these. And it's widely accepted that these are efforts to sell up. But there are a few people who want to pay $100 for a seat.
Julie on Twitter writes, I only use Allegiant when I fly to Florida. Tickets run about $50 each way. There's nothing American could offer me that makes it worth $100 more. I need no frills from an airline. I make my own frills. Just give me a cheap ticket. Michael emails, considering the massive subsidies paid to airlines in the form of free facilities and fee sharing, it doesn't seem unreasonable to show more consideration to the flying public. And Karen emails, new rule. She must watch Bill Maher. New rule. The more crap you bring onto the airplane, the earlier you board and the further back in the plane you sit. You have some rules here that Ted, that you offered that the airline should do. Get rid of the $75 fee to change to an earlier flight at the gate. Don't reduce the distance between the seats. Get rid of the $200 change fee, which you mentioned earlier on American and Delta. Provide more information when a flight is delayed and don't allow in-flight cell phone conversations. Are the airlines listening to those five suggestions?
In general, I'd say yes. I just picked those up from covering a hearing. And the airlines, of course, want to involve re-regulation. There's a lot of talk or some talk that we should go back to regulating airlines, which obviously in many ways didn't work. But as I said, we have our industry is fee crazy, and they put in fees a little bit too much. There's no consideration on going over allowing cell phone calls. I think the opposition's led by the flight attendant unions. You can imagine what a mess air travel would be if we had it. As far as pitch between seats, I can't quite figure out how you would regulate it, but it is an issue.
So be more polite, be more understanding, be a good consumer when you board an airline, I suppose, is the thing. And airlines should treat us better, too. Seth Kaplan's managing partner with Airline Weekly, author of Glory Lost and Found, How Delta Climbed from Despair to Dominance in the Post-9/11 Era. And Ted Reed is an airline industry reporter for Forbes and TheStreet.com and author of American Airlines, U.S. Airways, and the creation of the world's largest airline. Thank you both.